I just saw Mike Tyson, a video clip of him, and somebody asked him, what do you wish people knew about you? And he said, nothing, fuck you. And I feel like that's the energy we need to have for the rest of the playoffs. Like,
too many men.
Oh, that's way too many.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Too Many Men, playoffs version. My name is Allison Lucan, and I'm delighted to be joined by someone who is always just literally stunning and inspirational to me in the way she presents. But she pops on the Zoom today, so casual, looking just like a goddess after dropping an incredible story with her usual wit and flair on fun new names for the Utah team, the Utah Hockey Club, for which I literally laughed out loud when I should not have been reading something on my phone, but it was that good. Sarah Sivian, how are you?
Oh, Allison, I'm fabulous. Thanks for gassing me up. I mean, I thought it was game six Hurricanes today and I acted accordingly. I have several like appearances to do before that game. And I was like, oh, let's get on the ball today. And it's tomorrow. So I guess I just will look cute for 2 days in a row. Like, who knew that was possible?
Well, and also let's talk about it. Like, by the time people listen to this, it will actually be Hurricanes game day.
Yes.
So it's like you knew. It's like you were preparing in advance.
Exactly. And that's how we live.
And Sarah, we would not be Too Many Men without the woman who absolutely doesn't hate your team because she wants every series to go for game sevens for pure self-maintenance insanity. It is the brilliant, the ever insightful, the person who I text and go, what the hell just happened here? And she immediately can tell me 18 things. Shayna Goldman. Shayna, say hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. You know what? I feel like awake today and alive. Like I'm good. Maybe it's that there's only one game tonight.
I know. It's well, this is that weird time of year, right? Where we're like, we've been inundated and it's taking over our lives. And all of a sudden we're going to be like, where did it go? Like, why is this happening?
Yeah. When we get to the every other day schedule, it'll be like half the week. You're like, you say hi to your family. Like, who are you?
Stephen goes, what are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know. So yes. All right. Well, speaking of that, before we get to NHL playoffs, let's break down everything that's going on in hockey. Sarah, what time is it for us?
I would have died for your sins. Instead, I just died inside. And you deserve prison, but you won't get time. Thank you. That's been my brain for the past 2 weeks. It's time for Bit of News. Waiting for that one.
I'm clipping this and finding some way to send this to Taylor Swift because we know she's a sports fan.
Well, at her. We're going to post this at her.
When I met her, I told her I related to Reputation because I'm a sports journalist in a male-dominated field. And she was like, I'm relieved somebody related to this. So maybe we'll be like, Taylor, remember me? Here I am. I still love you.
And now we can relate to her second most unhinged era ever. Like, my goodness gracious, the concert, Shayna, I'm going to send you clips. The woman is unhinged. It's wild. Like, it's wild.
What do you mean? The Paris stuff and the Europe tour?
Well, so the concert is eras, right? So each album is an era. So she has inserted an era for this new album. And it's very angsty. So her performance of these songs is very angsty.
There was like a teaser supposedly for this that like earlier in the tour, no one noticed. And it was like a white microphone. See, I'm getting all these TikToks because I always get the TikToks about the fashion, people like making their own looks.
Yes.
And it was funny. I was going to send you something and be like, this is my Eras tour. And it was me making a wrestling jacket. But then I forgot to send it. And then all of a sudden my phone is giving me all this Eras stuff on TikTok. So I'm like, I'm very with it right now.
Very, very.
That's how it goes.
Have I listened to a new song of hers? No, but
listen to Smallest Man Who Ever Lived. It's rock. You would love like the punk version.
I listened to the Post Malone one. I lied.
That's,
I listened to one.
That's a good one. My favorite.
I actually listen. I'm a basic bitch. I do like it. Like I,
it's growing. On
I like
me.
Him a lot. So it's like,
oh yeah, it's so Post Malone. Yeah. Okay. We are not a Taylor Swift podcast, but we will shout out.
We
will shout out since you brought up wrestling and strong women. Shout out to Jackie fucking Redmond, who is brilliant and gorgeous and takes zero shit. And she has told us she will come on the pod and we're going to respect her crazy schedule right now, but we hope to make that happen because she's just a badass. So If you haven't seen the boys, she is just knocking down left and right. Go check out her timeline on the Twitter. All right, Biddle News, here we are. Talking about some other kick-ass bitches who are just doing some awesome stuff. The PWHL playoffs are underway. There has been some exciting stuff. Last time we talked to you, we talked about how Boston comes back in shocking form to get to the playoffs. And now, Shayna, what has Boston done? Tell us.
Boston has swept Montreal. Boston made the playoffs by beating Montreal in overtime at the time when I don't think any of us really had them making it, right? We thought Ottawa had a better shot than them, and Boston fucking battled back when it mattered the most, takes out Montreal in overtime to go on to play Montreal, the team to beat, right? I think most of us saw Toronto, Montreal being the final for all the reasons. And here they fucking go. It took 14 periods of hockey, I think it was. We had a regular overtime, a triple overtime, and then another overtime game to end it. Aaron Frankel has made 141 saves in 3 games.
She's no Stuart Skinner.
She is unreal. Toronto, Edmonton, give this girl a call. You need the help. And we see the game winner scored by Susanna Tappany, who was traded for midseason by Boston in the Sophie Jakes trade that we questioned, rightfully so, right? But they needed help right now down the middle, and they needed scoring. And when they needed scoring the most, they fucking got it. Wild stuff. Amanda Pelkey's jailbreak goal, like everything you could want more in a series, the drama, the everything. Boston's moving on to play either Minnesota or Toronto. Who's to say? We'll find out. We can't find out later, right? It's tied 1-1, I think. So we're still going to get another game. But now we're going to see Toronto without Natalie Spooner.
You're taking my next thing.
Oh, sorry. Go.
She's like, I'll just keep going.
I didn't know where to go with it. Go.
Sarah, I wanted to ask you too, because you have been talking about how you're going to try and get to one of these next games with Boston advancing. Can you give us a vibe check? What's it like there right now with all the excitement around this team?
It's awesome. I mean, I've been to a few of the regular season games and they just kept being real. I love Hillary Knight's interview. I mean, she came on the podcast. Like, her interview, she keeps it so real. And she's just like, you know what? This is a new league. I genuinely think we have to switch it up a little bit on the lines and we might figure it out. And it's going to take a while. You're against the best goalies in the league, in the world, but we have a really good goalie too. And it's all going to come together. And then they're like, nobody thought she wasn't a good goalie to begin with. And then it's all kind of coming together, the pieces, but the vibe here, I mean, it's a little disappointing. People have called out the lack of attendance, but it's an hour and a half out of the city in like a very hard to get to area. So, I mean, I've talked to Stan Kasson, who is one of the owners of the team or the league, and he's mentioned that they're going to try to get out of Lowell. Like, they're going to make moves, but they just wanted to start the league. You know what I mean? So it's encouraging to see the people there that are there. You know what I mean? Like, it's pretty out of the way. So it's good to see that the vibes are high. People care. There's a lot of like Boston Globe coverage on it. And there's people that cover the Bruins that are also running there to get there. Like, it's pretty good.
Well, and as Shayna said, this is what I wanted to ask you is that, you know, a presumptive partner for the next round is Toronto. This was the team that we talked about last episode. They got to pick their poison in terms of who they wanted to play. They announced this morning, this is Wednesday as we record, that Natalie Spooner, who I do keep me honest, Shayna, led the league in goals. Yes. Led the league in goals in the regular season, is out with a knee injury. We all know the legacy of great former Buckeye player, Natalie Spooner, but can you make an assessment yet, Sarah? Do you have a read yet? We know how great Natalie Spooner has been her entire career, what this might impact to Toronto.
Yeah, she's everything. She's brought the electricity this postseason. So, I mean, that's a huge loss for Toronto. I mean, if you're asking me objectively, I wouldn't think Boston had a chance, but the way this played out against Montreal with kind of like the close winning and shutting it down early in overtime, it's like, I think they're gaining confidence and remembering they have these pieces and this team that was supposed to be good, and it's coming together, and they're being who they aren't overplaying, right? They are playing to the strengths that they originally had, and they hadn't been doing that before. So I think they're going to give Toronto a hell of a series, especially with Spooner out. If that's the end.
If that's the end. Good point. Now, there's a team, too, that has made a change behind the bench that isn't in the postseason, and maybe that's part of why they make that change. But Shayna, in your backyard, the team in New York has parted ways with their head coach, Howie Draper. So there's going to be some differences there. I've even seen some rumors that they might look at Robo, who's the head coach for Team USA for the women, as a potential there. This is early in the process, but what can you share with us about that decision and what we should be watching for?
Well, I like that he's going to stay with the organization, I think, as an advisor, which is nice. You know, like, he's part of it from day one, but this had to happen. I think New York needs new vibes, and the roster they have, I don't think is, I don't want to say the easiest to coach, but it's not your typical lineup. Like, it's not filled with stars and here's your depth players. It's contributors in different ways, and you have to learn how to balance that. And I think that that was a struggle all season. So I am really curious who they find and how they can find a way to punch up this roster. Like, they have the first overall pick. They could get Sarah Filliate. They could get Danielle Sardakny. Like, there's star power that they're going to get that's really going to change the entire look of this team and make a coach's life a hell of a lot easier. But it'll be really interesting to see what direction they go. Like, this, everything's new, right? Every trade is new. Every coaching hire is new. We don't know how things are going to go. So we'll see where the PWHL goes. Are we going to see recycled coaches start coming about? Are we going to see new names get a shot here? Like, who's to say? So it's such a cool time, right?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of cool times, I mean, listen, we've been putting in the work for years. We've been trying to bring attention to growing representation in hockey in all areas. But Sarah and Shayna, it seems like the NHL has finally caught on. They're on brand. Maybe they'll sponsor the pod, because there have been 15 too many men calls, and we are not even through round two. Six of those calls alone have come by Boston. We will talk about that series specifically in a moment. But when you think about what playoff hockey is supposed to be, these are the best of the best, theoretically, particularly as the rounds advance. This is a mental mistake that comes from a bad change. Aside from everyone in hockey finally realizing how badass we actually are, Sarah, do you have any takes on why we're seeing this huge number of too many men calls across the league?
No, and that's why I started questioning it last night. I was like, the Bruins have six. That ties for all-time playoff history, the most too many men calls, and they're only in the second round. So that's crazy. It's a coaching issue, but it's happening through various teams. So you're like, did they, the face-off fucking dot shit, like, pisses me off to begin with, when every year they crack down the refs on one thing that they can actually control, right? So that their bad calls go on. I don't know what it is when they try to, okay, we're going to police the face-off dot, like they're a hall monitor, when that doesn't matter, when goalie interference matters and they fuck that up constantly and have. But is that what's happening here with too many men? They're like, okay, we're going to keep an eye on the men because we can't do anything else. Like, I can't imagine these teams are suddenly like not knowing how to get on and off the ice.
Shayna, other than this obviously being a movement by NHL officials to draw attention to our podcast, what else is going into all of this?
You know, it's so odd. I was curious, like, maybe it has to do with the long change, right? Like, maybe that's a part of it. And only three have happened in the second period. Funny enough, all by Boston. So maybe they have like a certain area to work on. Like, obviously Boston's going to be in this heavily if they have six of 15, for fuck's sake. But like, maybe that's something for them to work on a little bit. And I mean, hell, we were almost at 16 when the Canes had too many men while they were shorthanded.
Didn't get called, yeah.
Last game, man, it didn't get called. And I was like, damn, come on, just keep pumping up these numbers. But yeah, it's like you said, it's a mental mistake. And I know the pressure of the playoffs is high, and a lot of these games are so up tempo and everybody's just fucking racing around. Like, it's funny, it's not those slower games we're seeing in as much. We're seeing it with like Boston and Colorado taking them, like Dallas, these faster series, I feel like, a little bit. But you got to slow down and like keep track of who's on the ice. Like, it's going to be funny. Like, how do you take out this mental error? How do you take out the human error of it? Is it going to be like an assistant coach has an iPad and it tells him how many players are like on the bench, off the bench, based on the tracking things? Like, it's just, it's funny to me, but it's going to be really interesting to see if like how coaches try to work on that, right? Like, it's not something I feel like you think you have to worry about at this time of year. And yet Boston especially, like if that costs them the fucking series next game, and it could, it might. Like, what do you do?
Yeah.
It might. They keep getting scored on the power play. There was one double minor where the Panthers scored twice. Like, it's really been brutal.
Absolutely. Well, it's funny. Like, I would always tweet, right, and say, like, oh, something about too many men, our show. But like, I'm almost like, this isn't funny anymore because it's happening so much. Like this is just routine.
What's going on?
Do you know the best part though is I love, like, in the regular season, we get all these tweets of people being like, oh, another two underscore much underscore man. And it's like, yes, but in the playoffs, like, I feel like it's so much more. And sometimes it's like, it's cool to see, like, you didn't know who follows us and who pays attention. And like the support is so cool right now. Like, we're going to have to figure out something cool to do with this. But like, I love that it's not just Twitter giving us the support. The players, they listen. Oh. The coaches, they listen. The organizations, they can't get enough.
They're like, sponsor this podcast.
Please. They're like, you know, it's like when you do a commercial and it's like how many eyes get on it and things like that. Like, they're testing the waters, mm-hmm. I guess, right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Shout out to Sean Shapiro. I thought he was hilarious when people were all pissed off because, of course, and I get it, fans think that every call against them is biased and the broadcasters are biased. And Sean Shapiro was like, I just thought it was a very enthusiastic ad read for Too Many Men podcast. But yeah, let's think about that. Let's maybe see if there's some sort of contest giveaway we can come up with related to how people capture the Too Many Men calls on social. Watch now. There'll be absolutely no more the rest of the playoffs, but we will see. All right. Well, we've talked about the most important trend in the playoffs. Let's get to the actual series themselves with some hockey talk. And you know, I have a funny story. I actually now have West Coast bias. Like, I watch these East Coast series and I'm like, like, I know most of these guys, but like, like, I'm so much more invested in the West Coast series, but
the West has been better. The West has just been better. You're right.
The East Coast is doing its best to make me care. Let's talk about both of these series. And I have multiple rants that I would like to go on during the course of this show today. So let's go off on the one on which I don't have a rant, so we can wait for those. And that is Carolina, New York. This series currently sits at 3-2 with the advantage going to New York, but that doesn't tell the whole story because New York had a 3-0 series advantage and Carolina has impressively come back to even the series. I think this is a more accurate representation of what this series really has been. Like, even that game 3 win when the Rangers went up 3-0 was like inches, right? And just like one mental mistake. And then here we are, Rangers are up 3-0. But there's so much going on in this series. Sarah, what are you paying the most attention to? You obviously know a lot of the history of the Canes while you're not necessarily covering this team specifically, but what's calling out to you? What are you noticing? What are some keys to whatever's going to make this series a success for one side?
I mean, it's obvious and you can go two routes, but it comes down to special teams. But you're like, should the Hurricanes just avoid the box at all costs? Jamie Benn, sorry. Or should they score a power play goal? I mean, if you can't do one and if your whole thing is being sound defensively and playing a sound game, it's like, stay the hell out of the box if you're going to err on the side of caution. But now that the floodgates have maybe opened with they've cracked the Rangers, like, don't let the Hurricanes' inability to score on the power play distract you from how good the Rangers' penalty kill has been. Like, there's a reason they haven't scored, and it's not because people aren't trying. It's because the Rangers have figured out the scheme, but as the series goes longer, it's like you can refigure out how to counteract the scheme. So now we've got ourselves a ball game, and it's two extremely even teams. One's better at the power play, and it's literally as simple as that to me.
Shayna, to that point, I love that observation. Like, what was the kind of maybe deciding element of play that you saw help the Canes push themselves from 3 straight losses to 2 straight wins?
I feel like they were good in games 1-3, right? Like, it was a close 5-on-5 series, and it's kind of interesting because the Rangers, the games they lost, especially game 5, like, they were better 5-on-5 than we've seen them be. Like, it was a more even series. But I think it was just what we always say the Canes need. It's a little bit more oomph when you need it. And you see the top players being the top players, right? Like, we were talking about Jordan Staal not shooting the puck. And then when he does, look what happens. And, you know, you see the Svechnikov line with Aho and Gensel really push back and really bring the heat against, you know, they were shutting down the Panarin line with their pressure. Like, that's what they needed to do. It just feels like they needed more dangerous chances. Yes, you can shoot the puck a bunch, but if you're getting kept to the outside, you might pepper Shesterkin with 50 shots, but he's probably going to save those lower danger shots. So you really need to test him. And it seemed like they were making the adjustments to get more to the net front area and go for those tips and deflections. But, you know, they still needed to be testing him as much as they could with every other shot from the scoring area. So I think that was the big adjustment for them. And it's going to be so interesting now because they have home ice, so they can still kind of control the matchup and try to get what they want in this game as well.
Yeah, this is, I mean, it's really interesting to me. This is a topic that we've talked about a little bit before, and it popped on Twitter for like a hot second, but like, I don't think we're still using goals saved above expectations properly, in that most people are looking at it cumulatively across a season. And at the very least, you need to be looking at that per 60. But gosh, who was it? Max Bultman, I think, brought it up to me, and we were talking about this on Twitter. It's all public out there, but he was suggesting looking at it per shot. And I think that's a really compelling argument. Now you're gonna have to wait till you have enough shots to look at it. But we've kind of missed the boat in talking about, to your point, Shayna, how good a shot is versus how good a goalie is versus how many shots there are. And I think we really need to rethink how we look at goals saved above expectations. That just, oh, I said I didn't have a rant, I have a baby rant.
No, but it's a good rant to have, and it's important in this series too. Cause like, there was one game I had tweeted out that Shesterkin had a quality start, and people were like, that wasn't a quality start, he barely faced anything. And it's like, but he gave his team a chance to win. And that's right. How we're thinking about, like, we can think about goaltending 10 different ways. It's the position we know the least about. We have the worst data for it. Mm-hmm. You know, would it help if we could break down by shot type and by everything else? So we have to figure out different ways to be creative and do it. And that right. You're completely right on that. Like, it's really great thinking. Like, we need to look at goaltending different ways, and we need to think about how it applies to each series and each game and each team in a different way, because it totally does.
Well, also,
oh, go, Sarah.
You go. No, you go. Finish that rant, because I have a kind of related but different rant.
Because, like, here's my thing too. Like, to that point, like, so if Shesterkin faces 50 shots, but 40 of them are bad, that's not necessarily, quote unquote, not high quality shots. That's not necessarily a lesser workload than 10 high quality shots.
Exactly.
Like,
exactly.
You can run a mile fast or you can run 10 miles. Like, both are equally hard, just in different ways. And we're not contemplating that at all, in my opinion.
And how many goalies respond to one versus the other better? 100%. How many goalies that need that high volume workload 100%. Because they're on their feet and they're moving, and you might see them making those saves that are going to be super eye-catching, right? They make all the highlight reels. Look, he got across the crease and blah, blah, blah. But that goalie versus a lower shot workload, even if they're more dangerous shots, might struggle a bit more too, because now he's overcommitting and there isn't that traffic and there isn't the, you know, those shots aren't coming. And now he's completely out of the crease and he looks frantic. Like, that matters too. It's all different things. Like, we just don't have enough information. And then we get into the different conversation of, where are those shots coming, right? We're seeing a lot about, like, high blocker, low blocker, glove side, all a top corner. Is he good on the short side? Like, all these different questions. And we heard it, the Vasilevsky question, right? Was it high blocker for Vasilevsky? That was, like, the weak point. And it's all we heard about. So it's like, we all find these narratives to, like, hold on to in the playoffs. And there's one this year for goaltending. I know we're going to get there. But, like, I just think that we need to take a bigger look at everything, especially yes. Because it's the position we know the least about.
That, and to your point about that, I was thinking about the Hurricanes-Rangers series, and it's just like, yes, you can go on naturalstattrick.com and say the Hurricanes might be playing a better game at 5-on-5 at some times. And this is true. And the way we analyze data, it doesn't mean they deserve to win. It doesn't mean we throw out the data or that, like, they deserve to win. You know what I mean? It just shows us, wow, you need a power play ace, like, you just do. Mm-hmm. And it's just sometimes, like, the two camps that are like, oh, well, 5-on-5 doesn't matter if they're playing better and still losing. But no, it's telling us this could be an even better team with more aces, you know?
Yeah. And when you're tweeting it out too, like, you might be getting the one thought out, but, like, we're not, some of us aren't sitting here making 20 threads about it and trying to explain every thought. Like, right. You get something quick. I feel like everyone's so, I know it's like a tense time of year and people just, like, jump on it, but it's, yes, like, wild to me, because it's like, Okay, we tweeted out the preview for Rangers Canes, which had the percentages on it, which people went fucking crazy about. And my mentions, I just couldn't stop muting shit because it was like a lot. But then you get to game one and you say anything like the Canes had a pushed back really well in game one, right? Like the Rangers went into a defensive shell, not the move. The Canes almost battled back because of it. Like that matters. And you tweet that and it's like, well, now you only care about the Canes. And it's like, Peter Laviolette said the same thing. Like he said it and it was okay. But you're not like, you're getting quick thoughts out. And I feel like no playoff series and no playoff game is getting captured in quick thoughts. It literally isn't happening. Right. It's a 60-minute fucking game. And like, we get that.
I just saw Mike Tyson, a video clip of him, and somebody asked him, what do you wish people knew about you? And he said, nothing, fuck you. And I feel like that's the energy we need to have for the rest of the playoffs. Like, okay, if you think I love the Canes, whatever. If you think I hate the Canes, whatever. I am going to be objective and say what happened in the game no matter what, so cry about it.
Like that, like I can't, like, I totally understand because I have been a fan of other teams and other sports and still am, but I can't express enough that when you have to do the jobs we do, like you're not rooting for things, like you're rooting for a good game, you're rooting for cool stuff to happen. But and sure, you might think a player like deserves, you know, finally getting rewarded for something, but like the bias for most reporters is non-existent. But that's a whole nother discussion that we can
there's bias for everyone. And it's like, and also like if anyone has something that they root for, like I root for a long series, or I root for certain players to do well because they're cool and we love them, like I'm gonna root for Bestie Leon every fucking day of the week. I don't care the Oilers can lose 7-6, I want him to have the 6 goals or 6 points. Like
it's fun,
right? It's fun. Yeah,
100%.
And it's like you're not allowed to have those opinions, but it's also like it's, I feel like there's this weird line now, like I'm going in a totally different area, but like, whatever, it's relevant. I feel like there's this weird line about like where you can be a fan and where you can't be a fan and what you're allowed to support and what you're not allowed to support. And the rules apply to some people and not the others. And it's like, it's so annoying. And it's like, we have to accept that it's a different age than it was. And also like, if you're doing this job now versus 30 years ago, like people know more about you now because of social media and things like that, you know? So it's like easier to like,
gambling.
Yeah, you can like hunt through them and be like, oh, see, blah, 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 blah. But it's like people forget, like you're just like a human being. Mm-hmm. It's okay to like have a feeling about something. I don't know.
The gambling stuff has really exposed that. And it's like, well, what is bias? Is bias liking a player, rooting for a player, or is it putting money on them? And that can mean two different things. And it's like, you're actually financially biased towards something. I think that's a hell of a lot worse or less objective than if you like a player, acknowledge it and move on with your life. Like there's just so many different levels and layers and people just don't understand it. And it's constantly changing, like you said. So it's an interesting discussion of where we're at right now. And you see, even on the broadcast, it's like, I'll get a tattoo if the Leafs win or something. Right. And if that's okay, why are you calling me a fangirl?
Right. Well, yeah, that's,
yeah.
Well, let's get into the next series in the East. And this is where I have two rants related to broadcast. And again, I am part of broadcast. So listen, I'm not shitting on people, but here's my thing. So, okay. Boston has now performed a similar task to Carolina. They've come back. They're now just one game behind. It's 3-2 Florida advantage. I was quite impressed that Boston eked out that last win in Florida that was full of craziness, but I expected Florida to be really dominant on home ice. But I have two things that are driving me absolutely batshit crazy. Number one, the narrative while Boston was losing was, well, look, you're not going to win if you have just this many shots. Boston gets raked across the coals for not shooting up. Vancouver is also being outshot. Why does shot volume sometimes matter and sometimes not matter? Like, we do know it is factual. It is statistically proven that the team that has more shot attempts is more likely to win the game. So why do we shit on Boston for that, but we don't shit on Vancouver for that? Like, it has to be a standard expectation of what we expect out of a game or how we talk about a game. Secondly,
I love it when you're fired up. Like,
let's go. It absolutely blows my mind that literally, and apparently including the league, no one saw the angle that very clearly shows Bennett punching Marchand until the day of the next game when they had it in the pregame show. Because I kept seeing the clip of him colliding with Marshawn. And I was like, I don't get it. Like, Marshawn was obviously impacted, but I was like, I don't get it. It is egregious to me that, like, my understanding is that the league and certain parties get every single feed from a truck. Like, that is insane that no, and video coaches, I thought, get every single feed from a truck. It is insane to me that that content did not get out. So those are my two rants. I can't believe how the hockey narrative can apply to one team and not another team about shot volume. And also, this game had, for a minute, now last game was a little more controlled. This game was having, well, I guess it didn't because we had the goaltender interference call again. But this series, I'm frustrated too, because there's a lot of noise happening around it that whether or not the right team wins or loses, like, it's affecting the integrity of the series. Those are my thoughts. Sarah, go.
100%. It's been brutal, like, very unenjoyable. I've not enjoyed covering this series. I'm not going to game six. I'm like, sorry, guys, you're on your own, kid. Like, I cannot. The controversy is real. It's valid, though. That's the thing. Like, Bruins fans should be pissed for multiple reasons. And then everyone's like, Bruins fans can't be pissed. Like, you're getting outshot. But to your point about being outshot, like, that's something I'm struggling with my own narratives in my head throughout all this. I think that's where the eye test kind of does come in. I look at the Corsi more for me here, and it's the lack of sustained pressure the Bruins have been able to put on in the offensive zone, as opposed to, like, the Hurricanes' lack of shot quality, right? There's a whole different bends and turns everywhere. And these games have been close and are being decided by the officials. Like, this is happening, and that, it might have galvanized them, though, because now they're coming back for game six, right? But that was a brutal goalie interference non-call. The city would have burned down if that other goal interference thing happened with McAvoy last game. That was a resilient comeback effort. I don't like Florida fans. For as few as they are, they're absolutely miserable, whiny brats. Oh my God. And you know who's the band, the leader? Michael Ruiz, Michael Ryan, my boy. I love him. I know he's trolling, but I don't think his fans know that he's trolling, and it's the most miserable. Like, they're making jokes about the Jim Crow laws in Boston. You guys live in Florida. Yeah. I don't know if, like, we can go there. I really hate Panthers fans. They're obnoxious and they get mad. Yeah. You know what? Bruins fans, they might be annoying.
They are. Let's be real.
They are. But they're right about the goalie interference, and it's been exhausting. I don't know. I like tuning into even the Canucks Oilers series over this. Like, it's just been miserable, but hopefully the better storyline of resilience with the Bruins comes out of this, or the Panthers being good and damn fun to watch. I'm sick of it being something else. Hold on, I need to plug my laptop in.
Sarah's going full Bachelor. Like, I'm not here to make friends. Just being all fun, everyone. I love
it. To that point, Shayna, you and I mean, we talk about the controversy, and we're not necessarily saying that Boston is the better team. Florida stacks up to be the better team. Both you and I, Shayna, picked Florida to win this series. Sarah did pick Boston. But again, whether or not the quote-unquote right team wins, I just hate the marring of the series. Now, we've had some phenomenal theater. I mean, both coaches have been just absolutely tremendous.
It's too good.
But, you know, again, to be clear, all of this is not a comment on who should win or who shouldn't win. It's just wild. And I will say this, I am actually glad. I don't like the controversy around the calls, and I don't like the inconsistency around the calls, and I don't like us not seeing all the video angles about some really significant shit. But I am glad that Boston is finding a way to make this a series, because this was pretty dismal for a while. What are you taking away from Florida-Boston so far, Shayna?
I love Paul Maurice. New favorite coach in the league. That's my guy. That's my king. Give me that rant about everyone with how many sips of water Marchand's going to take, because it's so true. And I know so many people are like, oh, that was such a salty comment. It's fucking funny and it's fucking true. Whenever there's a player injury, we are all over it. And like everyone's checking for lines and wants to know. And Sarah and Allison, I'm sure your messages and, you know, tweets are always crazy. People are like, is this one on the ice? And blah, 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 blah. How does he look? Is he in line rushes? Like, that's funny. That's theater. The coaches, the drama, the everything, give it to me. Love it. And it kind of takes some of the pressure off from the players when the coaches are going off, which I also love and appreciate. I don't want to see a series decided by bad calls. I don't think necessarily the Bennett punch is going to decide the series. And that's like a right. bad call. If that was missed on the ice, I wouldn't have thought anything.
Well, but the argument is, which isn't necessarily wrong, is that if you had seen the punch, would he have potentially gotten a game misconduct or a suspension? And then he wouldn't have been on the ice to score the goal. I mean, look, that doesn't mean he's the only player that would have scored a goal, obviously.
I feel like he wouldn't have gotten a misconduct because I don't think they would have caught that on the ice. Fair. And they would have had to see something called as a major and then review the tape.
So they have suspended him, though, after the fact.
That's where it comes in. And then the next game comes into play.
Right.
So to me, it's so odd that everyone doesn't have control of these feeds. Like, we know player safety.
Someone does.
Who does at this point? And, you know, like, you expect player safety to see everything, right? We hear it all the time. Just because you don't hear someone got a warning or something, they might have, because player safety is watching everything. But it's like, how are you if you don't have the feeds? And I have a million questions on, like, why? Is it something? I know there's, like, remote production for some broadcasts. Is that why? Like, there's a lot going on with the playoffs from the behind-the-scenes look that I think we need more information on, right?
I don't think it's malicious. I think it's incompetent. I don't think the league is biased towards, as I'm shitting on Panthers fans, I don't think the league is biased towards the Florida Panthers in any way whatsoever. But
and it was
there
great
needs
television
to be questions. There needs to be answers. Yes, great television. Yeah. There needs to be
why?
Answers. Why?
Who's responsible for it? Who doesn't care enough to make sure it's happening and shit like that? It's important.
What's less important but hilarious, because I have to share this to you, is I went because you were going all in on Paul Maurice. And I have to tell you, Jim Montgomery's dive simulations was gift to humanity. And so I typed in, I typed into Google Montgomery diving NHL. And you guys, there is legitimately a Montgomery dive club in Silver Springs, Maryland. I just had to share that. Well,
that's amazing.
There's lots to watch here. We'll see. Marchand did travel with the team to Florida, but he obviously did not play. So we'll see what's going to happen there in terms of his availability. And obviously, as much as this is a divisive player, the games are always more fun when he's in it. We'll see how this series takes us through. Let's move west. Here is now the counter to my shot argument. No one talks about the fact when Vancouver gets outshot. Apparently, that's fine. But here we are, Edmonton-Vancouver, in my opinion, the best of the four remaining series so far. It's tied 2-2 with some last-minute heroics by Edmonton to win that last game yesterday. But here is where my next rant comes in. And I want to say first, Hank Lundqvist is a gift. He is a beautiful man. And when that man is on television and teaching us things, we are all better people for it. But here's my issue. He comes out last week and goes on a rant. Again, I ate it up. It was tremendous. We all learned something about RVH. There's a lot of people who don't know what that is and how a lot of the default tactics that goalies are learning today, such as the RVH technique, are actually not necessarily the right decision in all situations. But here's my issue. The goal that triggered his rant was the Zadorov goal. Okay. Leon Draisaitl has been doing this for years from the dry side of the ice. Thank you very much. Trademark. Stop. But listen, but here's my thing. Like,
I feel like me and you are going to be insufferable by the end. I hope that this is why I need the Oilers. See, I'm biased. I'm rooting for the Oilers because I want to keep going with the bestie Leon names from where he shoots on the ice.
It needs to go to game 8 so we can say Demko might be available for game 8.
But here's my thing, like, seriously, like, as when because Draisaitl, I think, scored a goal either that the very next game from his usual spot, which is along the goal line. No one said a goddamn word. And it's almost like an affront to Zadorov. It's like Zadorov's not allowed to score from there. He's not as skilled as Leon Draisaitl. Like, why is it when Leon Draisaitl is elite and we love to watch him play. And that is his little office, is scoring those sharp angle shots. But why is it? I hate when it's like, when a not as great player does something, then it's like, well, the only reason they scored is because the goaltender screwed up. Like, why couldn't he have just shot a really fucking good shot too? Or why couldn't it be both? This came up never over years of Leon Draisaitl doing exactly this. Okay, it's but the narrative. Games are fabulous. Go ahead.
It's the narrative of the series to me, where they're like, the Stars deserve special treatment, or the Stars, this and that. And it, like, it is, in this salary cap era, you can't say the Stars deserve this or that. You need to pay people more accordingly, or there's going to be fewer Stars on every team. That's how the world works. I don't think anybody should get a break for having Connor McDavid or Leon Draisaitl on their team. I understand that the league should answer, and they did. Carson Soucy is suspended, so they took care of that. We're talking about different things, but the same vein about just giving the Stars special treatment or what people can and can't do. It's like, nope. This Vancouver Canucks team has thrived on finding any means possible to win, and it's worked out for them so far against the big Stars. So don't penalize them for that. But yeah, it is frustrating to hear these narratives pop up in, it's like the boys club series.
I like that. Yeah. I mean, again, listen, I thought Hank's insight was incredible, and I think he's right. It just blows my mind that it was a Zadorov goal that triggers this, not 18,000 Leon Draisaitl goals that are basically the same thing that triggers this. Now, to Sarah's point though, Shane, I want to ask you this. It does feel like game to game, the momentum, the vibe you get from the game, it feels inevitable that you can figure out who's going to win. Like, one side has control and then the other side doesn't have it. And then the very next game, that flip-flops, which is making for fantastic hockey. But what are you making of kind of no one side grabbing hold of this thing? And we're talking about Stars. There's one that finally got called out by his head coach, and that's Pettersson, gets called out post-game last night. What is your take on kind of the ebb and flow of these four games so far?
Well, first, I got to support your rant. I'm with you. I think, though, here's the thing. I think when Lundqvist explained it, it taught us all something that 100%. That a lot of us don't know, right? Like, a lot of people don't know about RVH. And I think it's really interesting because when this was talked about right after we saw that Vegas series and Logan Thompson gets pulled, and that could have been something that contributed to it because his numbers were great. But we see that the Stars they figured out to beat him up high, and his positioning had a lot to do with it and his tendency to go with that. So it'll be interesting to see how goalies adapt and change. And I hope this is something we keep following up on with all shooters. And I know, like, it's going to be tough to say, hey, can you stop Bessie Leon from that angle? But I'm really curious if we see goalies start to rein it in a little bit, because like Hank was saying, that can't be your first thought. You have to, like, read and react to the play a lot better and a lot differently. But when we learn something about goaltending, I feel like we all go on these, like, not all, but like the narratives can go crazy because nobody knew it before and didn't understand goaltending before, that they have to grasp onto that. And like, it's like, no, that's not the move. It's the same thing as the Vasi high blocker stuff. But to your point, as you teed me up for, sorry, I just had to, I love the rant. I've been waiting for this. It's so interesting, the series, because you're seeing the star power for the Oilers. And obviously they're stacking their lines at time because we know that Draisaitl's not 100% healthy, but I mean, the man knows how to play on one leg. We saw that a couple of years ago, and he still looks fantastic. He's crushing it. McDavid's crushing it. And you can see how they can take over games, but you need that from the Canucks as well. And this is why this series, I think some people had concern about the Canucks, because the star power in Nashville is great, but it doesn't compare to the Oilers. And you're not, now is when you need your stars to shine a little bit more. You're going to get these goals from guys like Dakota Joshua and Elias Lindholm and Connor Garland. And that's been great for Vancouver, right? They have the depth that we're not seeing from Edmonton's bottom six, but you need Pettersson to get going. And earlier this series, we hear he's healthy. That right there opened the door to, okay, he's just underperforming. And, you know, I know he doesn't have a lot of playoff experience, and a lot of people, oh, he's a choke artist in the playoffs, because that's the only narrative people know how to go to if you're not performing. And it's different for him, right? Last time it was in an empty arena, but I think there's more than that going on here. I mean, part of it is he's supposed to be the driver of his line, and you look at who he's playing with now you know, Nils Höglander's not in the lineup. It's like you're dragging along Mikheyev, and that's tough, but you also know he has the star power to push through that. He did all regular season, so you want to see more from him. It's great Miller and Besser producing, but you need him to be the guy as well. So
Besser is doing awesome. I just wanted to bring that up. Like, it's really cool to see because he's somebody I've criticized often. And it's great to see his good regular season carry on into the postseason.
Absolutely. But yeah, like, you need it from everyone, right? Especially in this series. Yeah. This is a series you're going to need it more than anything. And then you go into the, you're losing the shot battle. And yes, your defense has been really good. You're going against Stars and you still have a third goalie in net. You need your star power. As great as Shilov's has been, and it's not to take anything away from him, there's more uncertainty about a goalie when we know less about them. For sure. So you don't know how this can go moving forward.
Well, and to that point, the shooters don't necessarily have the full book on him yet either, which could work in their advantage.
Exactly.
Well, this is again, these are my favorite games to watch. I think it's just tremendous, tremendous hockey. And again, I just want to be clear because I can see someone hearing this the wrong way. I too love Hank Lundqvist in general. And I thought his education was phenomenal. I just want to see us question it when we see it all the time.
They're big boys. They're allowed to be questioned. They're going to be on this broadcast.
I know.
We love them.
Of all the people, I just want to be very clear.
I know.
I think he's really important part
he
of that broadcast
the whole
analysis.
Yes. Complexion of it.
He commands respect, you know.
100%, as he should.
Yeah.
All right. We have one final series, and I think we're going to take a light touch with this because this is a series that might be over. Well, a lot of these might be by the time we talk to you all next, but this is a series that comes closest to being over. It is the Dallas Stars hosting the Colorado Avalanche, and now the Dallas Stars have the opportunity to close out this series tonight. This is Wednesday. They have a 3-1 lead, and I think the most compelling thing, not just for this game, this series, is not what's happening on the ice, but players that are being taken off the ice. There's been some great plays. We've seen Wyatt Johnston just continue to ascend, but we saw Roope Hintz leave Game 4. He is not expected to play in Game 5. Devon Toews was out due to illness after taking a huge hit in Game 3, misses Game 4, but he's expected to be
Game 2.
Thank you. Game 2. He's expected to play tonight. Jonathan Drouin returned for the Avs, but the big question now, and I think in my opinion, and I'm not around the team, this was a huge blow and it really impacted how the Avs were playing in this last game, that they just didn't seem with it and just didn't seem to put up a fight. And that is Val Nichushkin, who for the second time this season is going to be away from the team. He has entered the players' assistance program. He is at a level 3 of 4. He will be without pay and he's going to have to be away from the league for at least 6 months. I think there's been a lot of really honest and raw reaction from coaching and teammates about this. I think it's a really hard balance because this is a human who is obviously dealing with some pretty severe issues. And as many who are much more intelligent about this topic than I have pointed out, recovery and sobriety is not necessarily a straight line path. And so this is really hard to watch, but you can also at least understand that for a team that desperately wants to contend for a Stanley Cup, when a player who you had in morning skate, all of a sudden you find out before game time is now going to be gone for the rest of whatever your playoff run looks like, that can feel like a huge blow too. Sarah, this is a really complicated issue. There's a lot of question marks about significant players for both sides, but with this Nichushkin situation, where is your head at? What do we need to remember? What do we need to be thinking about here?
You know, there's so much and I'm going back and forth. And I think regardless of what allegations Nichushkin has been accused of, I know there's body cam footage of a woman who was allegedly trafficked. I know they're figuring all that out. But that aside, we can look at the actual rules that and stages the NHL players. What is it called? The
assistance program.
Okay. I keep going back and forth about this because no one's entitled to a multi-million dollar job. You especially aren't, I guess, if you're going to be putting the team at risk. And he's in a program, right? They're having him in a stage of this program. It's not abandoning him or saying you aren't worthy of recovery because you messed up. It's okay, we need to hunker down on your recovery with repercussions. That said, there's more and more research coming out that says substance use disorder is not a linear thing, as you suggested, and you shouldn't throw it all away. It encourages the mind of an addict to throw it all away. If you're sober for 100 days, mess up on day 101, like, no, you can still consider yourself on the path to recovery. It's all a very complicated thing, but at the end of the day, I don't know what the best solution is here. He knew what the repercussions were, even if this is how recovery goes. It really sucks, but hopefully we can trust the Players Assistance Program to have him in the correct stage. It sucks to be penalized for trying to recover, even if you slip up, but it's just kind of the nature of being in a high stakes, multi-million dollar job.
100%. So there is obviously a personal level that takes paramount to anything else. And we hope that he and his family can find peace and recovery. But there are real on ice impacts. And I don't know, Shayna, if you agree with me, this Avs team for the first time seemed to lack purpose, seemed to lack focus. And I can understand, excuse me, why, but there's a real impact on the ice to not have this player playing big number 13. And I also really worry about Roope Hintz now being out for the Stars. This is not necessarily a top point producer in the postseason, but this is a big important piece of how this team can attack in layers. What are you watching for as the series maybe concludes soon or maybe takes a couple more games in terms of how both sides need to recover from some key absences?
Yeah, it's like, I feel like the narrative has changed a little bit. You go game one, they blow the lead. Game two, Dallas almost blows the lead to Colorado again. You see that pushback. Game three, the Stars shut down the Avs, right? In the way that they needed to. Mm-hmm. And then you go to game four, and was there anyone really to shut down? It's totally different. You can't even look at it the same way game to game because of the situations and all the extenuating circumstances that the Avs are dealing with. So you really don't know what you're going to get in game five. My brain would say, I'm watching for Colorado to have some pop. I'm watching for Cale Makar to stand out in this series because to me, he hasn't yet. He was good in game one and that was kind of it. I don't know if it's an injury. Like, listen, all year, I know he had the points this year, but you look at his play at 5-on-5 especially, and it wasn't as impactful as I expected to be from him, especially knowing who he tends to share the ice with and how they operate as that five-man unit. And there were some concerns below the surface. And I know he was injured. And when he came back from injury, like, you could see it. But is that happening right now? Like, I don't want to speculate on something, but he just doesn't look like himself. And we're not seeing Nathan MacKinnon steal games because he's the kind of player that can. So that's something to watch for, especially if Roope Hintz is out of the lineup, because here's your guy that goes and play those minutes head to head against MacKinnon. And in game one, Hintz got crushed by that matchup. In game two, they split Hintz's time up. So he didn't only get buried by it. And it really benefited the Stars. The thing we do know to watch for is the Stars' depth stepping up and how much lineup versatility they have because they have numerous players who can, like, skate down the middle. So Wyatt Johnston jumps up, plays center on that top line, which when he generally plays with them, he's on the wing for Hintz. You know, it's going to look a little bit different. You're seeing Sagan now get a look with Stankoven and Robertson tonight, I had to think, because Marchman's playing on the third. But, like, you have all of these forwards. Can they all come together to make up for Hintz not being there? I if the Avs look anything like game four, I would say, yeah, sure. But is this an opening now for the Avs? Like, there's a lot to watch for in this series that makes it exciting more than game four would tell you and more than a 3-1 score would tell you.
Absolutely. Well, we will keep our eyes on that. And as usual, when we come back to you next week, we will be breaking down where each series stands. We may even have some new conference final matchups to discuss. We will see. All right, we end every episode with our very favorite game, and that is Fuck, Marry, Kill. And Shayna, your little lead up could not have been more perfect because this week, as we do during the postseason, we're working our way through the major NHL awards, and we are going to focus this time on the Norris Trophy, which goes to the best defender in the league. Both Shayna and I have gone off on this, both with our voices and with our writing for years, that no one knows how to measure defense, but here we are. Sarah, you are up first. You get to FMK, the three official finalists as named by the Hockey Writers Association. And they are, of course, Quinn Hughes from the Canucks, Roman Josi from the Predators, and Cale Makar, who we just talked about, from the Colorado Avalanche. The floor is yours.
All right. Without giving away my own ballot, two of these were on my ballot and one wasn't. I'm going to kill Kale McCarr. Just wasn't his year. Needed more out of him. The injury stuff, it just like when there are so many good ideas in the field and there are so many different ways we evaluate defense now, right? It's like there's just too many options this year. I'm going to kill him. I am going to marry Quinn Hughes. It's sometimes, not always, the simplest thing is the right thing. And he scored a massive amount of points that directly helped this team. And he was also extremely defensively sound because, like, how are you defensively sound? Oh, when you take the puck from an opponent. So simple as that. We're giving Quinn Hughes a marry there. And I'm going to fuck Roman Josi. I think he was more important to his team than Quinn Hughes was. Which that's not the award. The award is the best defenseman. So that was neck and neck for me, but I ended up, you're going to fuck Roman Josi. He maybe should deserve a, what's, oh my God. I'm like
the MVP.
Petering out at the end of this. What's the best, the Hart Trophy. Yes. He might deserve a nod there, consideration there, but that's a different trophy. So I'm going to fuck him here.
Shayna, what are your picks?
I'm with you on all that. The Roman Josi conversation is so interesting because I think the Norris Trophy a lot of the time gets screwed up with the MVP discussion because
what's going on?
Second time it's this. If you
I've never seen
Yay.
That.
No, yeah, never like, happens to me.
For those of you who are listening to the audio version and not watching the YouTube version, remember we have that. We've just learned that in Zoom, when you hold up the peace sign, you get balloons. And we're like four-year-olds because we're so excited. Only Shayna gets it.
Never be me.
Okay, go ahead, Shayna.
You know, I think sometimes we've seen the Norris vote go towards someone who's literally the team MVP. And that was a conversation with Roman Josi a couple of years ago. That was a conversation with Erik Karlsson last year a bit. Because people don't know how to put a defenseman in the Hart Trophy because they tend to lean on forwards and we don't know how to judge different types of position players against each other. And I get that. But for me, Josi's definitely, I mean, I don't give a shit. I'll say my fucking bracket, but my votes. Josi was two for me. And he had the edge offensively over Quinn Hughes in my mind. And he did a lot more with a lot less. And the way he drives the puck up the ice, even though they're not a big rush team in Nashville, like to me, he was everything and more, especially down the stretch. But the defense, I give a very, very slight edge to Quinn Hughes for, which is why I would marry Hughes over Josi. They're neck and neck. I think it's a lot closer than we were ever thinking. And maybe it's because in the beginning of the year, we all thought it was going to be McCarr versus Hughes for this, down the stretch, battling it out. The first couple months, it really was. But I think Josi took his place and should definitely be like a firm too. So marry Hughes, fuck Josi. I'm going to kill McCarr. I didn't have McCarr 3 on my ballot. For the all-star picks, I have McCarr. So I know it might sound like a conflicting thing, but to me, he wasn't the best all-around defenseman. If I remember right, at 5-on-5, the Avs allowed more goals against in McCarr's minutes relative to his teammates.
Yeah.
Very shocking to me when you play most of your minutes with McKinnon and Rantanen. You would think the offense would have been better. You would think the defense would have been better because you're always owning the puck. It just wasn't there below the surface for me. I think that there were better options to round out the ballot, like a Josh Morrissey or an Adam Fox. So I have to kill McCarr.
Well, I think this is the second straight week in a row that we are hitting the too many men hat trick because I also agree. And I am with your most recent point, Shane, is that I think the early season narrative hurt Josi. In terms of him not being in the discussion early from a public perception perspective. And I give the edge though to Quinn Hughes, not only for the tactical reasons that you guys cited, but he's not built like a traditional defenseman too. And so I think his ability to be as effective as he has been is very notable. I really like how Josi does still uphold a little bit more of that defensive side to him, a little bit more of the like, he challenges you for us to figure out how to measure what he's doing, right? But yes, I agree with both of you again, because you're brilliant. And I just latch right on. All right, my friends, that will do it for us this week. We are having so much fun bringing you both playoffs from the women's side and the men's professional side. It's a great time to be following the sport. We will be back with you next week. But until then, if you want to connect with us, in addition to watching on YouTube, if that's your jam, Shayna, what is that handle again? She doesn't
Too
remember.
Many Pod?
We'll post it in the show notes. Who's we to post say? It. You can follow us on social at 2_much_man, where we'll also post the YouTube channel again, just for shits and giggles. Mm-hmm. Connect with us there. We didn't hear from anyone if you wanted us to do a watch along. So if that's something you're interested in, you got to let us know. The games are dwindling down quickly, so we got to get it on our calendars. You can connect with us there. You can also connect with us by getting some merch and showing your TMM pride wherever you want to be. In addition to celebrating the calls in games, you can get hats, you can get sweatshirts, you can get notebooks, anything your little heart desires. And until we talk again, we ask each of you to please do something, no matter how big or small, to make sure that hockey truly is for everyone. We will talk to you soon.
Love you.
Bye. We'll be right back.